Welcome back to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM, WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and You. I'm your host, John Ryan. My co-host is Otto Lowe's today.
Going there.
And we are having a wonderful conversation with Hal Bach, who is an author, the author of The Last Chicago Cubs Dynasty, Before the Curse. And we found out about the goat and the curse just before the break, which is interesting. But the next piece of it is, and we had Benjamin here earlier, and when I mentioned Hal's name, the first thing he said was Tinker to Evers to Chance. Now, I only learned about that when I read about the stuff. I had no, this guy knew it like this, if you're a fan. And he's a Hal fan, and he's a Cubs fan. So I'm sending it back to you guys to explain what that is. Tinker to Evers to Chance.
Hal?
Well, they were the double play combination for the Cubs. Tinker was the shortstop, Joe Tinker. Evers was the second baseman, Johnny Evers. And Chance was the first baseman. He was also the manager, Frank Chance. And they were assembled by a man named Frank Seeley, who really was responsible for putting together the team that became that dynasty. And he was a great judge of baseball talent. And he moved players around. And Tinker had never been a shortstop. Evers had never been a second baseman. And Chance was a catcher, and they made him a first baseman. And they eventually settled into those three positions. Now, in those days, ball players dressed in their hotels. It's interesting. I would have liked to have seen that.
But got the you mean from street clothes to the uniform?
They didn't have a dressing room at the ballpark.
Okay.
They dressed in the hotel, and they would go out to the ballpark in cabs. Okay. And usually there'd be four or five guys in a cab. And one day, the second baseman on this combination, Johnny Evers, who was not a friendly woman, friendly guy, he hopped in a cab and went to the ballpark, and he left his teammates in the hotel lobby. And Joe Tinker was just he couldn't believe that Evers had pulled this stunt. And he confronted him when they got to the ballpark, and they had a little bit of a spat. Clubhouses were great places for fistfights in those days also. At any rate, they went on the field, and Tinker decided to get his revenge by firing a throw to the second baseman, Johnny Evers, and it broke his hand, broke his finger. So now Evers has offended Tinker by leaving his teammates in the hotel lobby, and Tinker has gotten even by breaking Evers' finger. They were furious with one another, and they said, one said to the other, I don't know which one inaugurated the conversation, I'm never talking to you again. They played side by side for 5 years without exchanging a word, which is a difficult thing to do. I mean, Otto's played ball, and I played some ball. You kind of communicate, you know?
Well, especially but those two positions.
Exactly, second and short.
Yeah.
But they did not talk for 5 or 6 years until finally somebody said, you know, this is stupid. Let's get together here. So they made peace. But I found that to be a very interesting dynamic. That's the kind of guys they were, you know?
I have a question for you that has absolutely nothing to do with anything with the Chicago Cubs. It really has to do with my curiosity. You've written a number of books. This is not your first book. You've got how many before this?
This is my 13th book, and my 14th is going to be coming out in the fall.
Okay. And besides that, you've been writing for the Associated Press for 40-whatever years prior to that. So when you started, you weren't quite in the straight pen era with the fountain, but, you know, when you started writing, because I can relate to, you know, you might have used a pad or you might have had a portable typewriter.
Exactly, sure.
And it was a very different process, writing something.
Well, today everybody has a computer.
Right.
Everything is computerized.
Right.
In my day, I worked with computers as well toward the end of my career, but in my day, you carried a portable typewriter, and you had a lot of paper.
Yeah, right.
And you wrote. My work was for the Associated Press, and it's a kind of a different breed because we have a deadline every minute.
Right.
So that the theory is that when the game ends, you better have a story ready, because some newspaper is needing it. They're going to press, and they got to have a story. And so we called it a deadline every minute. And I loved that pressure. And I would write during the game as the game progressed. A lot of people write what they call running for major events like a World Series game or an All-Star game. You would write running. And you'd write what happens in the first three innings and send it to the computer or to wherever it's going. In those days, it was a teletype operation. And you would update it. And then when the game was over, you would top the whole thing and write a comprehensive story. So it was a day's work. It was a lot of work.
But I'm trying to think of, like, now you have to do all this. People who never really used the typewriter, like I used to have to use a typewriter to do papers for school and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
If you make a mistake, you have to fix the mistake with white out or do whatever.
Sure.
So you get if you do a carbon copy, I don't know if you had a copy for yourself when you were doing this. If you had to do two, you'd have carbon paper in between the two, and it became a whole big complicated affair in order to correct both of these things.
Life was not simple in those days.
No, that's what I'm going with it. In other words, people really who in today's world really don't understand what it was like back in those days to have to write like you did with a deadline.
And
you had
you're
to get
also,
to be pretty
by the
good
way,
with
you're
the
also
typewriter.
Keeping score.
Yeah.
And so if you're writing, you can't be watching the game. So you're looking up and you're looking, and it's like your head is on a little bit of a toggle.
Well, I think probably having to watch a game all the time, you can lose your concentration after a while.
Oh, sure.
Because like baseball is a long season. You know, 162 games a year now, 154 back when. You had to pay attention every day, all day, to everything that went on within these baseball games in order to write about it.
You have to be committed to the sport and to what you're doing.
Yeah, and I just found it, to me, very interesting because it's kind of goes back to the senior making the adjustment to technology. You know, if you stuck with your portable typewriter, you would have been out of business. You couldn't have kept up with what was going on.
Well, I'll tell you a little story about that. I was covering a game, the Philadelphia Phillies at Shea Stadium, and it was the ninth inning, and I'm writing. And Joe Morgan was at the plate, the great Joe Morgan,
yeah, sure.
The Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
And I was writing, we have an open press box. A ball hit me in the cheek.
Oh, boy.
A foul ball. Grazed my cheek because my head was down. I didn't know.
Oh, boy.
So, I mean, those...
You were lucky that it did.
Yeah, it didn't take out my eye.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know,
it's amazing.
Grazed
you. Yeah, because you can't do both things at one time, but you have to.
You have to.
You're looking up and down and trying to type because you have to get the stuff off.
Yeah, exactly. And you're trying to write a coherent story.
Well, that's the importance of the knowledge of the game and the knowledge of the players, because then you can just sense he's getting up to bat. And you know enough about them that you don't have to be watching every move.
Oh, sure. Well, you have to be a student of the game.
Yeah, 100%.
You have to love what you're doing, and I did.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't sit there every day watching it if you didn't like baseball.
Right, if it was just a job.
Right.
You had to own this job.
No, I happen to really like baseball, too, and I walk a lot, all right? And I'll walk, and all of a sudden I'll see there's a kid's game going on. I'll sit there for a few minutes to watch this kid's game, even though I don't know anybody in the game.
Right, okay.
You know, just to watch the game.
It offends me when people say, well, football's now the biggest sport, the very first one. In my head and in my heart, baseball will always be number one.
Well, I think baseball is a game that if you're very involved with it, every play, every pitch, whatever position you play, you're thinking about what you're supposed to do. Like if you played right field and you're supposed to run and back up the first baseman. You know, there's how many men on and this and that. It's a thinking game, believe it or not.
Cerebral. It's a cerebral game.
Yeah,
That's why I love it so much.
You have to think about every
exactly.
pitch has something that you're supposed to do. And that's why you can get bored if you were never taught to think about what you're doing. You really have to be taught that by somebody. You know, I remember having one good coach along the line who really taught us the game. You know, he taught us everything about what you're supposed to do at every position, every pitch, this situation.
Well, that's the proper coaching versus somebody who's just saying hit the ball and run there and run home and, you know.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people that, unfortunately, I mean, I give them credit for being there, but,
right, of course.
You know, but they really don't know the game. And I do keep my mouth shut when I do watch my grandchildren play. I don't want to get involved with
it's hard.
Micromanaging, right, right. You know. I'm happy they're out there, and then what happens, happens, you know. But anyhow, that has nothing to do with your book.
Well, it's all pieces of it, though, because the reading of his book elicits those kind of thoughts in your mind, too. For somebody who's reading it, you're turning around and you're thinking of how things have changed.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, things have changed for Hal, I'm sure, over the years, you know. And I think what's an example to seniors who listen to our show, like I said earlier, 33 might be 34. But anyhow,
there's two out there who are 36.
Yeah, there's 36 today. you know, the fact that you're retired theoretically, but you have a lot of things that you do. You know, it's not like you're just sitting there
right.
twiddling your
well,
thumbs.
Well, no, I mean, I love to write, and I love to, as I said earlier, I love baseball, and I love this era, and I've just finished another book. It's called Banned from Baseball, about the players who have been suspended and thrown out of the game. You know the great story about the Black Sox of 1919
yeah,
who threw the World
movie.
Series. And they were all found innocent in a court of law, but the commissioner of baseball threw them out of the game, Kenesaw Mountain Landis. He threw a lot of people out of the game. So I've just done a book about that. And I love that stuff. I love that the source of that information is the game, and I love the game.
And actually, we're out of time with the love of the game. Hal has this book and the new one about the band, which is also probably a very interesting book. And they can be get on Amazon and you know,
exactly.
Barnes & Nobles, etc.
Just look up Hal Bock,
B-O-C-K. H-A-L-B-O-C-K, Hal That's Bock. Right. This was very informative. I thank you very much. You're listening here. We've been listening to Senior Talk Radio on 88.1 FM, WCWP.org. We'll be right back.